Good morning.
This is episode 208 of Transmission. It's
208.
June 14th, 2021. Astonishing.
There we go.
Remember back when we, I mean, at this point we could be doing this in the same room, but remember when we started awkwardly sitting in front of that fake fireplace in my house so many years ago?
I do. Maybe that's the redo we need at this point, is to start being in the same place.
I need to build a professional grade studio.
Yeah, we probably need like a 2-camera setup.
Three.
Some whole thing. Well, 3 if we were doing live TV. Yeah.
Well,
oh my gosh. Today is Flag Day.
What?
Okay.
So, I mean,
that's so funny. We were just talking about American holidays and my wanting to get rid of all of our holidays. And today is another one.
Like, I get that there's Memorial Day for like dead soldiers, and then there's Veterans Day, which is just for veterans of armed forces. And there's President's Day. Mm-hmm. And then you have the different presidential birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
Does the flag need its own day?
Apparently.
Just take out, do you just, everyone like, I guess you could put out your flag. I mean, what else is there? Just eat, is there any special foods? Jello, red, white, and blue Jello molds?
That would be big in Northwest Minnesota, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some kind of Jello mold.
Well, that fits to the topic. problem with evil.
It does. So I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Stunwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. Speaking of evil and Jell-O, like, this has nothing to do with that, but I think apparently aspic, the food, is making a comeback. That's basically savory meat Jell-O.
Meat Jell-O, right?
Yeah, it's like a kind of a savory meat gelatin, and then you suspend vegetables, different kind of cuts of meat and egg, things like that in there.
Yeah.
Which I've actually had. I was in Germany and I just kind of pointed at the menu one time because I didn't know German. And they brought me aspic. And everyone was grossed out by it because they're all Americans. And I thought it was pretty good. But they thought it was evil.
Okay. See? You liked it. They thought
I connected it to the theme.
In a very loose, tangential sort of way.
It's Monday. It takes me a couple days to get going.
So, so this topic is kind of frequently discussed. This is a big thing, I guess. I took a whole course in seminary.
I had a theodicy class.
Yeah, theodicy class. Right.
Fancy term for it.
And let's see. Ellen's got a comment about Flag Day. We should probably get to that first.
Does the flag need its own day? Judging by the Americans who don't follow the flag laws, yes. And Gus, can I recommend David Rovick's song "The Flag Desecration Rag" to celebrate today?
Here's a great little fun fact. In elementary school, when I was in sixth grade, because you had to be a sixth grader to do this, my friend and I put up and took down the flag in front of the school. Yeah, learned how to fold it up properly and do all the things.
Wow, yeah. New.
It's kind of fun. Trooper. Yep.
So evil.
Williams
brings us back. He says, I did an independent study for undergrad. We did experimental philosophy, surveying people about the problem of evil. There we go. Okay. Way to bring us back, William.
Yeah, cool. So here's the interesting thing to me. I mean, this is my kind of provocative comment about this. this is a huge thing within Christian circles, and people have been, you know, talking, writing, you know, millions and millions of pages about this, all this stuff. I actually don't think this is a big problem. And I think the reason, I think there are two reasons that it becomes a problem. I think the first reason that it becomes a problem is that our image of God is such that it makes evil become a problem. And then I think the other thing is that we like to be in denial as humans about who we really are and what we do to each other. And so that's the other thing that makes it a problem. But then in and of itself, I don't think it's that big of a problem. You know, evil exists because, you know, people do horrible things to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's really sort of the bottom line. And and I don't think Williams got this question here. I don't think that natural things are evil. You know, once you have a material world, you are going to have life and death. To me, that's not evil. That just is. It's just what atoms and molecules do.
Mm-hmm. Entropy.
Entropy is part of the system. So decay, things coming into existence, things going out of existence. That's not evil. That's a morally neutral activity.
and this is how the logic usually goes, because we've inherited couple strands of thought. One is that sort of Hebraic tradition of Almighty God. Like, there's a kind of a triumphant image of God who can defeat all oncomers. Now, the Bible doesn't use words like omnipotent, omnipresent, like these sorts of like understanding that God is coextant and beyond the universe itself. Like that kind of, that comes from more of the Greek thought, trying to understand the totality of existence. And how does God fit into that? So you bring that together in Christianity, and also you get this sort of thing like, of course, God knows all potentialities within the universe and chooses them through divine will. So therefore, whether you're stabbed by your neighbor in a fit of rage or killed in an avalanche or you get SARS, any way you die, it's somehow God chose that or allowed it dispassionately and is therefore evil. That's how the problem of evil is usually set up. How can you have a good God with the presence of evil? Either God is not good or God is not all powerful. And if God is not all powerful, then by definition, there isn't God. Atheism wins. Like, that's kind of usually how it's put out there. And there's all kinds of assumptions there that go into it.
Right. Many, many assumptions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, you know, particularly as Christianity becomes more imperial, right? So you've got the idea of the emperor who is the law and who is all powerful within the empire and has this big ass army that can smush you if you get out of line. So God is just the super abundant version of that, right? The super emperor. You then have this sense of control, right? So, you know, and you hear all these theological lines, which are just, you know, anywhere from sad to highly abusive, things like, you know, God is in charge and God is in control and God has a plan and God doesn't give you more than you can handle, right? And it's all based on this idea of this imperial, you know, big guy in the sky that if he wanted to could micromanage everything for good, but for some reason doesn't, right? And so then you have a problem.
Well, there's a hidden plan, and then you have to trust in the inscrutable mind of God and which, you know, maybe that's how it works, but this is where I kind of come into this. I'm like, maybe I used to care about that a lot, these sorts of questions, but I don't, because there's no way to know.
Well,
there's no way to know exactly like how, what we can know. I mean, I'm very experiential based. Like, what we know of God in my mind should come from comes from praxis, like us engaging life in the world and reflecting on that and say, God was there, God was not. Discernment of spirits. Mm-hmm. If to extrapolate metaphysically to some sort of nth degree, like there might be reasons to do that. But for me, most of it doesn't really affect my life or how I choose to engage the problems of evil. So I don't like getting bogged down in questions of theodicy or the doctrine of God, even though, I mean, I'm sure maybe that I have theologian friends watching who see how important this stuff is and I'm missing it, but I just don't care that much.
Well, I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, I think that it's important in the sense that, yeah, how we then choose to relate to the experiential stuff that you're talking about, I think follows, right? So, I mean, you're right that in the sense we can't fundamentally know, but for example, using Occam's razor, principle, so for those of you that are not familiar with this.
I only buy Occam razors.
You only buy Occam's razor. Yes, you're doing a very nice job. So this is a mathematical principle for dealing with very insoluble problems, right? Very complex mathematical problems. And Occam was, I believe his first name is William, was a mathematician. And, and basically came up with this notion that when looking at an incredibly complex problem, the simplest explanation is usually true. This is also one of the reasons why, conspiracy theories don't really get much traction in my world, because conspiracy theories usually postulate that the most complex solution is usually true, right? Like, 9/11 was a setup. And that would require thousands and thousands of people to be in on this and to not say anything and to, do all these things right at the right time to make 9/11 be fake. And Occam's razor says that's just not possible, that the simplest explanation is true, which is that, these 12 guys did this, right? This was a terror plot. So, to me, applying that to this problem of evil, the simplest explanation is that that God just doesn't work. Like, the problem of evil is positing that God works. That if we see all this evil and we think about God in relation to that, we have to say, well, no. So God is not this sort of being that theoretically could make everything fine, but just somehow chooses not to because God's playing, nth dimensional chess and has figured out that everything actually is really better this way. No, the simplest explanation is that that image of God is wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like.
William says, I agree. People can then justify any horrific event in history saying it was the will of God. Going back to the study of Ford Nation. Ed takes this into this is a very deep and complex part of the Christian tradition in some ways. Meister Eckhart says, evil also reveals God. It reveals our fragility and total dependence on God. We need to let go of our sense of entitlement. This is complicated. This has to do with suffering. Like, how do we make sense of suffering in my mind? Like, and this is where I recommend the book Suffering by Dorothy Sola. She talks about this a lot. And maybe we can spend more time on this tomorrow later in the week, because we'll be getting into the political stuff, I think, a bit more. But one of the things she says is, it's not like talking about the cross. It's not that God relating with humanity requires the cross. And this is, again, most Christians wouldn't want to talk about the problem of evil. At some point, we'll bring up the cross. And the idea is that since the foundations of the earth, which the Bible does say this, Jesus was foreordained to be crucified. And then the idea is, if you extrapolate that, is that suffering has its own meaning and reveals to us the heart of God. And therefore, there's a sacredness to suffering. I tend to think, like with Dorothy Sola, she says, look, in a world like ours, divine love will necessarily go to the cross. In other words, if there's a world where there's suffering, people are being crushed, God will be there, not because the sacredness is suffering, but those who are suffering are sacred. And what, to me, this is where it really starts to matter for me. It's not so much like me figuring out why is this happening from a metaphysical sense, and therefore I should like embrace my suffering as some sort of teacher. It's more that I know that it, as I suffer, God will come here, and then I can know more about God because God draws near to those who are suffering. So like, this might be academic for folks, but it's important, in my mind, to know that God is not beating the shit out of you for your own good. Which is where we often want to go. But instead, as you are being afflicted, God will come to you. But I do agree with Ed that there's a sense of entitlement, like where we think that, especially we start complaining about these problems that our world has created and that we have participated in, and we experience the negative repercussions of that. There just is a humility of like, how do we solve these problems rather than just crying out to God as the cause? Mm-hmm. Ellen writes, I think one, the concept of entropy, and two, monster myths, vampires, zombies, aliens are the best way to describe evil. Monster myths are amazing, though. They really are. Horror films and things like that, like, are very theological, if you want to think about it. Like, it's trying to grapple with these primal and evil forces.
Right. And I think that this is one of the reasons that you know, this is a really important subject, because, you know, we as humans are very overwhelmed by evil, right? And this is, you know, big evils and little evils, right? I mean, you know, you think about the amount of child abuse, you think about the amount of, you know, violence against women, people violence against each other. And again, we want to downplay or minimize all of this, but you know, it's massive, right? And so we're overwhelmed by this, and we think like, why does this, you know, keep going on, and why does this keep happening? And, you know, I think it's, for me, it's always been very instructive to, you know, to look at the Buddhist view of all of this, because Buddhism, of course, rejects the notion of some, you know, some of my teachers would say this big sky father who's going to fix everything. And they say, no, there isn't that going on. And they also do not have any sense that suffering is positive or redemptive. Suffering is seen as the problem, right? And you know, they localize the cause of all this in our own human confusion, right? And this to me makes infinitely more sense. And it also, Mark, is much more experiential, right? Because it's basically looking at what is going on, you know, what is my experience, what is the experience of my relationships, and what is the experience of human relationships in the world. And we say, well, look, here's the problem, you know, that people are doing all this horrible stuff to each other out of their ego process confusion, and that's the problem. And so fixing that problem would help to alleviate suffering. And again, I mean, this just is all much more simple and straightforward than all of this other, you know, theological gymnastics, which is necessitated by this very particular view of a deity.
Stefan writes, theodicy, at least for me, is super important. In my opinion, theological finitism, i.e. rejecting omnipotence, or the idea that God is all-powerful and can literally do any or everything, is the only view which allows believing in a good God. The view of a cosmic struggle makes much more sense. I mean, it gets interesting. Like, I mean, this is, you know, I'm going to jump to Maxwell Powers' comment. Allow God as its architect. there are people, and some of them are, you know, like Maxwell here, has a very strong liberationist tendency. But a lot of people, out of a desire to have this sort of consistent way of seeing the universe, will say, well, God is actually not just allows evil, but is the author of evil. And so there almost becomes this pitting of God versus Jesus that ends up happening because of this. And again, these are all ways to try to make sense of it. And I don't want to minimize, like, these are big and deep questions, and suffering is a huge issue. And there's a reason why we keep talking about suffering, evil, like, how does God fit into it, liberation. These are all potent things. It's just, for me, I just find there's a, I find it a bad habit in general when our instinct towards evil is to take a step back and then make a 30,000 foot view and analysis. And to me, it's not, and this is maybe overstated, but there's a reason that European theological traditions tend to be overly fixated on the metaphysics of evil compared to those traditions that are largely coming from a place of a struggle for liberation. And I mean, there's exceptions to that. It's not like only white people can be atheists. But I think there's a habit here that I kind of want to challenge, I guess. William writes, suffering is not sacred. And that's a big one in Christian tradition, equating those two, and it gets us into all kinds of issues. Margaret writes, well, one reason it keeps going on is that much of what we view as evil is the result of our mistreatment of each other, fostering psychopathology, which leads to more evil behavior.
Well, and I would say that is the main reason, right? I mean, that, and again, this is where, as I said, my second suggestion as to why this is, quote, a problem is human denial, right? That we don't want to take responsibility for this, right? We would love to blame it on, again, this invisible sky daddy, and say, well, you know, somehow he's making this happen. He's doing this on purpose. You know, we're in this, you know, massive puzzle that we've got to figure out. You know, it's for our own good. And we want to, and all of that to me is deflecting. You know, it's what you're talking about, Mark. It's deflecting us away from our experience, our responsibility, and just saying, like, no, the reason that there are children in cages down at the border is because European and U.S. policy for about 100 years now has been to decimate Central America, turn it into these literally banana republics, as in growing bananas for the West and coffee, and creating massive poverty and displacement. And, you know, now we've got this, you know, horrible situation. Like, we don't want to do that. You know, we want to say, like, well, somehow, this is moral thing that is going on. These are bad people. You know, God is working for good in the midst of it. It's like, no, we human beings are fucking each other up, and we don't want to admit that.
Well, there's also a kind of, and again, people have all kinds of different theological views about how powerful God is or how big God is, these sorts of things. And I don't want to just say, if you disagree with me, that all your theology is going to be junk and therefore you're dumb. I'm not saying that. However, there is a way in which we see this idea of the all-powerful God being used to reinforce power structures in our world. Part of it comes out like, look, God has a divine plan for your life, and if you don't do it right, suffering will come, and it's the way of God teaching you. That's why you need to rely on wise people to guide us and be obedient. And if you're obedient to us, then you're being obedient to God, and good things will happen. And so you can see how this plays into the sort of very Protestant work ethic-y meritocracy way of thinking. Or a way to keep people in their place is like, I don't know, little boy in a cage, why God did this to you. Have you thought about praying about it? And then I go off to, like, eat my BLT made with tomatoes from migrant workers. Like, without connecting that, because somehow I, you know, like you were saying, I push it all into God. Mm-hmm. It removes our own sense of agency and cause in the world. It makes us not aware of the complicity. And then also it tends to get us overly dedicated to this idea of authority and power being the dominating, the primary feature of who God is, mm-hmm. which I think God's the opposite of that, actually. Gus writes, I think there's a tension between rejection of the abuse of suffering as redemptive and attempting to use suffering as an opportunity to learn and grow. Yes.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like getting back to the earlier comment about, you know, is a hurricane evil? Which again, I would say no. A hurricane is just weather. we as human beings can be using all of our experiences to grow, right? And suffering, because we're right. And again, you know, I think the Buddhists are very instructive on this, right? I mean, old age, sickness, and death are inevitable results of being human. There is no way we can get around that. And that has nothing to do with God, right? That just has to do with the reality of being a living material being. And so, of course, all of that, all of our suffering, all of our joys, all of our triumphs, all of our tragedies, all of those can be opportunities for growth and development. But that has nothing to do with what God is doing or not doing to us to teach us something. There's a comment of CK.
If the corporate life we live in is antithetical to life, then evil or anti-life abounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and what you're getting at there, CK, is again, these corporate ego structures, these systemic structures, which visit evil upon, millions of people.
William writes, that's what I always say when folks ask why God would allow all these things. Why would we allow it?
Right, exactly.
Gus reflecting back on the tension between suffering being redemptive or an opportunity to learn. I suppose perhaps that's just a coping strategy more than theology. I mean, where's the line between those two things?
I don't think it's just a coping strategy.
I don't think so.
I think that is a theology that, if we are engaging our experience, for the purpose of growth and relief of suffering, that's very important. And again, this to me is the problem with this traditional view of things, right? I mean, if there's this whole deal of, okay, so Invisible Sky Daddy has a plan and is enacting this plan, and if I don't follow the plan, or even if I do follow the plan, I'm going to suffer, but I don't know what the plan is. I mean, this is just a recipe for endless anxiety, right? And, I'm constantly trying to figure out what the supposedly good divine being who is now torturing me is up to. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. And I guess my feeling is that if that actually is the way God is working, and I have no interest in that God. I mean, I'd rather be on the side of whatever is anti that God, because, that's horrible.
I'm glad that we're not in the same room, because then I'd be struck by lightning. If we take the attitude everything is radically dependent on God, then we have to accept suffering and evil as part of the divine structure. But we also have to see God's goodness and justice and live radically dependent on that. And later on says God's power is not about control, but about being itself. I mean, it's I don't agree, but I also understand, like, I have lots of friends who think along these lines, and we kind of end up in the same spot. So that's really where I get interested. What this does to me, in my mind, is this sort of radical dependence creates this posture of letting go-ness, of, mm-hmm. of letting go of outcomes so that we become open-hearted and generous toward the world. But it can also, like, once you start using the word power, we have an operative definition, and then we give God the mm-hmm. ultimate variety of that. And then when somebody says, no, God's power is antithetical to the power of this world, then all of a sudden it's kind of self-destructs, and we're starting to talk about two different things. And I can't help but notice that a lot of the people who most say God's way of power is different than the power of this world still use power the same way. So, like, what does it mean? What does it mean that God is powerful, that God's power is God's own life in the world, and we have to depend on it? Then that's when it starts getting interesting. Like, what does it mean to rely upon God and experience right. God yeah. in the world is really the question then that's more important. Right. And this other stuff, to me, just can distract from that.
Right.
And that's, again, me talking from my own experience and what's been helpful for me.
Yeah, yeah, I think that, you know, that, and maybe we can do this and as the week goes on, but this whole language of dependence, I think becomes equally important to examine, right? Because again, if dependence is based on this image of, you know, this fatherly figure in the sky who is, you know, handing out goodies, then, you know, and well, today I get a razor blade in my Apple and I just have to sort of suck it up because there's some good reason for that and I'm dependent on this, then that's highly problematic. I mean, I think there are ways that this dependency language is real and can be positive. But I think we really have to unpack that because it's been used very negatively.
A few more comments and we're going to move on till, I mean,
yep.
Thanks for the comments, everyone. We've had,
it's really good.
Episodes where we haven't had as many comments, and this is a dense area. So we didn't know. CK writes, what if this being just put it all in motion and left it all up to however it plays out, give us free will and we're just fucked up humans. I mean, I can see that.
Right. I mean, that's the deist, cosmic watchmaker.
Yeah, again, right, to me, it's that becomes personally uninteresting to me. And I mean, not mm-hmm. just because I find it boring, but because, like, well, what do you do with it? Does that mean that I can't experience the divine presence of the spirit now? And to me, that's way more, even though that's kind of like spooky, this idea of like trying to commune with the spirit of a risen zombie Jesus. Like, it gets kind of weird and spooky, but that's still more interesting and gives me some way of engaging than this deist God who wound up the watch and left it. And then now you're kind of fucked.
That gets back to Ellen's zombie mm-hmm. stories.
Yeah, and vampires. A leech lord. Stefan writes, traditional Christianity forgot its Gnostic roots. The New Testament talks about Satan being God of this world and Lord of this age and how Jesus came to defeat him and his crew. And the Old Testament also contains such images. So God neither allows suffering, but fights against it. And we are called to participate in that fight. I mean, warfare theodicy is people talk about that, the struggle against mm-hmm. evil and sees kind of more of a cosmic battle going on. And I guess maybe I can track with that. But to me, again, it's so up there in the heavenlies. Mm-hmm. And to me, I kind of have this tendency. I guess maybe I'm too humanistic. I want to bring it down to earth. Like, what does the struggle look like here now? Mm-hmm. But again, people have these different ways, frameworks that help them make sense of things. And it's, to me, as long as we're actually then engaging in real praxis and have a sense of discerning life in the moment, that's where I start getting really interested. Maxwell again says, but that being does control us.
Maybe doesn't. Or maybe a typo.
You know, Max would say God is omnipotent and controls us. And Maxwell talks a lot about like death of God and all kinds of stuff. So this is, I mean, he did a dissertation on some of this stuff. So that's a whole other realm of conversation, but it does tie in, like, if evil and then the idea of God having power and control. I just don't see it that way. William writes, I believe God and the forces of good in life will win in the end. I have faith that injustice will be defeated. I hope so. Yeah. CK writes, to me, it's like being a parent. You tell your kids to do the right thing, but overall, it's up to them to do it. Lots of juicy and complicated thoughts.
Yeah, well, it's a good stuff. And I think some good things to jump us off onto Wednesday. Maybe Wednesday we could talk about the origin of the word Satan, which would be fun.
Let's talk about demons and Satan devils.
Except that's not the origin. But
I know, but we can talk about it.
We can talk about it anyway.
Interlocking concepts in them in our current way of seeing things.
In our current view.
Yeah.
So, all right, great. Well, thanks for showing up and sharing with us, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
See you next time, everybody.